executive.
That one was at 2%.
You need a pen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That opened in May of 23. There's one closing in January. There's one already in construction.
I saw there were like pipelines. They've got like two or three other.
Gorgeous stuff.
And not 2%, but lower than
what you get out. You know, the next one might be at 4, but. Yeah, I don't know if the numbers work. I mean, they're building at a scale. That was all, you know, basically farmland out there. It was the end of the Shady Grove. But it's all totally built up.
Yeah.
This is for later. The sign, don't worry about that yet.
I don't know about that. You know, they use private developers to build it.
Yeah.
So we're going to start. I believe we will have no other legislators here other than me. So we don't have quorum. But we'll still do our business if that's okay. So of the committee members, only myself is here. Craig, I don't believe, is making it, and Greg is going to be late or not at all?
He might not make it at all.
I'll make it at all. Okay. So I'll call the meeting to order. I'm not even going to call for motions because whatever. Approval of this, you can't approve the meetings because there's no quorum. But Kevin, I'd love to hear your presentation.
Sure. So I've got some bling if anybody wants it. Oops, sorry. There's two. There's two.
Thank you.
Around the room. All good. So, you know, today we are in construction in Highland on Silver Gardens, a joint venture that received some support from the county through ARPA dollars, 57 apartments for seniors age 62 and older. It's an 18-month construction schedule, so ahead of schedule and on budget, which is a beautiful thing in the realm of construction. We're hoping to close the Quality Inn first week of November, start construction in October. We intend to create 82 apartments there out of the current 146 former hotel rooms. And it will be permanent supportive housing for homeless families and individuals across the different categories of special needs. And we're anxious to get that in the ground and up and running. We have a fairly large, real estate pipeline. Our geography has spread, so we're involved in about 6 counties currently. We don't do everything everywhere, but we're doing some different things. In terms of Ulster County, the other thing that's really increased greatly is our administration of programmatic grants, mostly funded by the state of New York. So right now in Ulster County, we have a restore application or a restore grant to $500,000 to provide repairs for seniors in their housing. We have 2 ARUP grants. Their ARUP is really to provide repairs to landlords who will then extend and provide affordable housing to targeted incomes for a period of years, depending on the grants. And we actually have a countywide grant in the amount of $1.5 million and a City of Kingston specific in the amount of $385,000. We were able to add a $400,000 energy grant to add energy retrofits to folks that were already receiving CDBG-funded rehabs so that we didn't have to do that twice. We have a couple of grants pending. We have another $500,000 restore grant that's for the seniors that we currently have some money left, and we have a pending application. We have another CDBG rehab grant for $800,000, single family rehab. Again, all of this is for Ulster County specific. That's pending as well. We have for ADU for Ulster County $6.7 million. In addition to $6 million for 2 other counties, we have $6.7 for Ulster County alone for ADU work. We recently closed a CDBG grant for single family repair for $800,000. So several millions of dollars of programmatic grants here in Ulster County, and in that, and the grants I listed are specific to Ulster County. We're administering quite a few more. Our pipeline is really about $40 million in grants. We continue to administer Section 8, the federal rental assistance program that is often, I think, badly maligned. This federal, you know, program provides rental assistance to families and individuals, at which all of the rental assistance must go to households earning 50% of the area median income or below, and fully three-quarters, 75% must go to families or individuals earning 30% of the AMI or below. It uses private sector housing, and you know, it's comparative to building new housing. It's quite efficient. You know, we're spending upwards of $500, sometimes over $600 a unit to build a home, a unit. It's very, very expensive today to acquire, to entitle, to build apartments or homes. And if you're giving somebody even a $2,000 a month rental assistance, which is rare, but rents are going up, that's $24,000 a year. Times 10 years, it's $240,000. Times 20 years, it's $480,000. It's still less than one unit of housing today. It can be, but we're relying on the federal government. The program is actually frozen here, and we get our money through the state. We're hoping that soon they'll unfreeze it so we can continue to give out vouchers that come back. Right now, if someone dies or leaves the program, we can't reissue the voucher. We have about just under 1,700 families, households in Ulster County receiving it. We administer some other supportive housing grants, we have HOPA grants for people with AIDS, rental assistance for them. We have some supportive housing programs. We have quite a portfolio of housing in Ulster County, from the Woodstock Commons to the Stuyvesant, Landmark Place, Lace Mill, Energy Square, more recently in Kingston, and we have some other housing as well. So we continue to help people buy homes. We are down now to, I think, ending the fiscal year just recently on September 30th. I think we've assisted 40 first-time home buyers, predominantly in Ulster County, but a little bit beyond that. We had been up to over 100, but with the price increase and the interest and taxes and insurance, the ingredients that go into an affordable mortgage, has been difficult. But we continue nonetheless. We're hopeful that interest rates will come down, and we continue to deliver first-time home buyer grants. Generally speaking, when we help someone buy a home, they're buying an existing home. We have the oldest housing stock in the nation here in the Northeast and in Ulster County as well, and generally speaking. So first-time home buyers, things that are affordable, often need some assistance, perhaps a new roof, new HVAC system, those types of things. And so the grants that we provide can pay for down payment, closing costs, and or rehab on the home. And a very effective program. We've helped a large number of people to purchase their first home. So I think that's an overview of the types of things we're involved in. I'm happy to answer any questions. Hope I've provided enough information. I think we just recently met with you, Mike, about doing some additional outreach to our homeless populations in hotels, and we're anxious to do that. We have certainly increased our supportive service side. Would love to find additional dollars for resident services. When people live in our apartments, we're in contact with them quite a bit. We have that opportunity. And so whether it's helping people, seniors, follow up on their health care after they're coming out of the hospital and make sure they make appointments and those types of things, to helping people make decisions about navigating difficulty in terms of jobs and daycare or family disputes, other types of matters, never mind special needs housing, where people have special needs, we're doing supportive housing, just in our affordable. Life is can be very difficult, and there's a lot of challenges cost-wise, and so helping people to navigate some of that, we think, and we'd love to get more money, more dollars, so that we could provide more resident services across just our affordable housing portfolio. But having said that, I'll stop there.
I have one question. So one thing we've talked about in other housing conversations is the AMI for Ulster County is relatively high compared to what we kind of, I mean, it is what it is because that's the statistics, but it makes it really tough for people to fit into the AMI and to actually be able to afford things. So does that impact you too as well as that?
Yeah, it has a mixed impact. So, for the first time ever, Ulster County's AMI has risen above Orange and Dutchess. That never happened ever. I think it's about $120,000 for a family of four. So half the people in a four-person household make more than $120,000, and fully half make less. Most of the programs then, start at 80% or 60% or 50% or 30%. There's a percentage of income, right? As incomes go up, perhaps that expands the homeownership buying market a little bit. Mm-hmm. We have had, now we're the highest income in the Hudson Valley, which Ulster was never had that distinction. It's mostly all new income coming. It's not necessarily indigenous income that was here. We also had the city of Kingston had the highest percentage increase in home sale price in the country in the third quarter of 2020 due to the COVID. People were buying stuff sight unseen. Not the highest sales price, but the highest percentage increase in sales price. So we had that distinction. So when incomes go up and we develop a tax credit funded and we're serving people at 60% AMI and 50% AMI, as those incomes, we still meet people that are making just a little bit too much to get into our, and then definitely meeting people that don't make enough to even pay for affordable housing. So it's a challenge on both sides. A little bit better opportunity maybe for home buyers, but the rental and we use county incomes. So if a project is for someone at 60% of Ulster County. And it's located in the city of Kingston. Incomes are lower in the city than perhaps other communities, and so it can be more difficult to get in. So affordable housing serves an important slice, but not the full gamut. That's why programs like Section 8, where they are serving, three quarters of those vouchers are going to people at 30% AMI or below. And when we develop Woodstock Commons, for example, that was developed at 53 apartments, one's a super, so we had family units, 32. They were a mix of 60% and 50% AMI, and we had 20 senior units. 10 of those units, half of them, were for seniors earning 30% AMI or below. Mm-hmm. And when we opened up in 2013, the rents for those apartments were $300. So you can, build something and try to set your rents and get enough subsidy to set your rents that low. But not many units are built in the affordable world to serve 30% AMI.
And it's a challenge, I think, that we've been seeing. I think Kai, you pointed out in some of the grant presentations that you guys did last session. And you're using, is it market rate? Is that the term that I...
For the affordable rental, the AREP, affordable rental upgrade program, and for the ADU program, because we have to put a rent cap on 80% AMI, and what's going on in the city of Kingston with their inclusionary zoning is an affordable rent at 80% AMI is higher than what the market rate would be actually. So for those two programs, we basically said 80% AMI or fair market.
Okay.
Fair market is the term I think you're referring to.
Fair market, yeah, okay.
Whichever is lower, and in all cases, it's going to be fair market. And fair market is what REPCO and HUD uses for the rental rate for housing vouchers.
Okay.
So any unit that gets built from the AREP or rehab from the AREP program or built through the ADU program is now on par with what someone would accept for a housing voucher.
Right. So it's a minimum of market rate versus the AMI percentage.
Yeah, so I think the issue really is AMI, using AMI for inclusionary zoning, like for the city of Kingston right now, like is the debate is AMI a good, or is 80% AMI a good right. measure for rent, for capping rents? And the answer is no. Because you're essentially saying, you know, this is the requirement, you need to cap rents at this much, but the cap is actually higher than what the market is out there for regular rents. And so right. you're actually in a weird way, you know, sending a signal that this is what we're calling affordable, but it's higher than what we see out in the regular market, not even affordable units.
Yeah.
So I think maybe, Kevin, for your programs, it's less of an issue because you're targeting incomes with subsidy for homeowners and renters. I think AMI still, 80% AMI still definitely works for home ownership. I think the trouble comes when you're trying to use that as a cap for rent.
And that's how, as you said, inclusionary zoning is doing it in municipalities.
Yeah, and so we're trying to signal to everyone who has inclusionary zoning that AMI is not a good, 80% AMI is not the threshold that you should be using.
Anymore. Yeah.
It always makes me jump. To Kai's point, the Alice report that was released and latest, the update that they have for 2024 completely kind of blows up this concept of AMI. It's like, yes, the AMI is that high, but then you look at the actual specific data to towns, and Kingston still has the highest number of people living within Alice, like living within the Alice guidelines.
Can you just explain Alice for anyone who doesn't?
I'm fairly positive most of the people in this room know, but okay. Alice is asset limited, income constrained, employed, and those are households. I get to be one, where you are employed, you have assets maybe, but you are still struggling to make ends meet. You are generally one paycheck away from still hitting absolute, you know, hitting the wall and having yourself become homeless. And so I guess in those efforts and in those conversations, we should be referencing the data that captures the actual reality and not the AMI based on census, which is based on a population that came here and has second homes. And so like driving those conversations and making them based on like current data as opposed to the situation that occurred and changed in 2021, 22, like those folks have houses here. Yes, those folks live here, but not all of them still live here. And it just, you know, the actual people that live and work here on the daily, you know, I can quote somebody who works in your legislative office, is that the majority of people who work in the county, live in the county, can't afford any of the proposed rents unless they have really high paying county jobs or work really high paying office, hospital jobs. And that is a very highly accurate statement, but my point here is that the Alice report to me has always been a better indicator. I remember learning about it when I was actually at REPCO. I have a question about some of the changes you guys have made over there, Kevin. There's 1,700 Section 8 vouchers you said you guys are administering right now, thereabouts. I guess I want to know if that number has gone up or down based on some of the changes you've done in project-based vouchers. I know that property management has found it kind of better, I think, to do project-based vouchers instead of doing Section 8 for some of the places that you guys own. But I'm curious as to how some of those decisions
It's had no effect on the tenant number.
No effect on the Section 8 number?
No.
So I guess those were not ever Section 8.
They were added project-based vouchers.
They were added project-based vouchers.
The state was able to give them out. And the Stuyvesant has them now, and maybe one other of ours, and then we administer for a couple of...
Yeah, there's one of Flaxall or Flatbush that got switched over, and...
Not Landmark. But
no, not Landmark.
Right. Yeah.
Hasbrook? One on Hasbrook I'm thinking of.
Yeah. Maybe Hasbrook, but a couple of ours. Yeah, but those were additional project-based vouchers issued for projects.
Awesome. Okay.
I had a question just about when we're on housing vouchers. The freeze, that's because the federal government, the Congress can't get.
No, I think it's, well, there's that, but the state of New York... you know, so HUD often works directly with cities. So the city of Kingston gets their vouchers and their public housing directly from HUD. We go through the state of New York Homes and Community Renewal, and they cover sort of the rest of the state. So our programs cover Ulster County outside the city and outside Saugerties and outside Ellenville. We can go into those places, but they all have their own direct from HUD. The state of New York did a couple of things. One, number one, they get, it's a money-based system, so they had a budget. Rents went up. They added some incentives to provide, you know, 1 month's security with the Section 8 to landlords to incentivize folks to feel that they would be more secure in renting, and those two things, and they ran through budget, and so they had to freeze the program. I think there's challenges on the federal level, though, on funding and, you know, budget and what have you. Yeah, you know, it gets a little complicated, I think what we're hearing is that people at lower, some of our native folks that have been here are making less incomes than some of the newer folks, and when things are set at 80% of these new AMIs, then we're not reaching perhaps the most needy of our folks, and it's true. However, I'll just add that, a couple things have really driven our crisis, one of which is household composition. You know, we used to have a composition of 2.61, and now, you know, we're forming smaller households, and people are breaking up, and every time, you know, that household shrinks, we need another unit, and so we haven't built anything, basically. Airbnb might be a little bit, and we've lost a few single-family homes to corporate investment, but the shrinking household size and the lack of building has really, I think, exacerbated things. So we are fans of adding new units. We think that the more progressive zoning at the city of Kingston is a huge step, and we think that accessory dwelling units, you know, and the kind of leadership that Ulster has shown there to get some more stuff done, adding units, perhaps today a little bit overpriced or maybe not reaching the market as well. There are more conversations we should be having with our elected officials at all levels to try to address that, but, you know, really happy to see additional units. And the new stuff that we're seeing, brand new buildings in Poughkeepsie, one bedrooms at 2,800, two bedrooms at 3,500. The city of Beacon had $1 million lofts, but now they have two bedroom apartments coming online, monthly rent, $6,000. This is like incomprehensible to us. We don't understand it, but it's happening. It's happening, and we're seeing, you know, some of these things here. So more units, and units that are perhaps more priced to our native population and the incomes that we're paying here are critically needed.
Yeah. Thank you. There's a tour Monday, right?
Quality Inn? Yes,
sir. Quality Inn. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Looking forward to seeing
you. Amanda set that all up, right?
Yep. All good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're looking forward to it. And,
thank you. My name is Greg Kelly, and I have a couple of questions specifically to the Quality Inn renovation.
Sure.
Well, I have you here. Then please correct me if any information is wrong. I'm calling from Daily Green article back in May. Yeah. So I want to get that out there.
Craig, are you a member of the press, or are you a proud resident of Ulster County?
Greg is one of our wonderful advocates of housing.
Good.
I've been advocating around the issues
of
mental health, substance abuse,
sure,
and homelessness for quite some time now. Yeah. So that naturally, that's where my interest is.
Sure.
First of all, I think it's a great project, but I just wanted to nail down some specifics on that.
Yeah.
It mentions that 24 units will be available for the chronically homeless. How is that going to be defined?
Who's defined by HUD
and who's not?
Yeah, it's a HUD definition.
Okay.
And it involves the number of homeless episodes. In the length of time being homeless, and I can get you the definition.
I believe I can find one.
Sure.
I appreciate it. And also the same thing with 15 units for homeless individuals, families with serious mental illness.
Yes.
Who is going to make that? Is that a HUD definition as well? Who makes that determination of what illnesses are serious, what are not, which merits these apartments, which don't?
Yeah, well, let me back up and say that New York State has created the Empire State's Supportive Housing Initiative, ESHI program, which has really a tremendous credit must go to the supportive housing community to create mm-hmm. this funding, and it provides a richer array of rent and supportive services for 9 categories mm-hmm. of special needs okay. of homelessness.
Okay.
And so they have, and so we're serving at the Quality Inn, I think, some folks with SMI, chronic or some substance use disorder, mm-hmm. and 1 or 2 other categories. SMI is a serious mental illness and is a diagnosis that's provided professionally, and it's defined here in New York State by the Office of Mental Health. So a person would need to have be both homeless and have a diagnosis.
Correct.
To,
so you
into those 15 rooms
to whoever is treating them, private or county run health system, private health, and all that.
We'll work with both DSS. The continuum of care and our what's our mental health group that meets in SPAWA group that will make referrals to us, and we'll also do our own outreach, as we're going to be doing with the hotels and other places, and we'll work with people to make applications, and if they have diagnosis, you know, then they'll qualify for those various categories.
Okay. All right. I assume the same would be true of the substance use.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, is there going to be any type of on-site treatment there, or is that just going to be someone to monitor the situation? Or
yeah, clinical treatment, no. Case management, yes. We'll have 24/7 residential coordinators on-site all the time. We're going to have a pool, a daycare center. The pool have lifeguards. We already have a bus. We'll have, you know, a mm-hmm. secondary vehicle. We've got drivers. I think two full time, if not 2.5 full time case managers. Yeah. Maybe it's 3. I'm not sure of the number. So we'll have full time professional case managers. Mm-hmm. Clinical services will mostly be, you know, through their clinicians and the referrals that we'll make, and people following up with their own doctors, psychiatrists, and counselors.
Is there any consequences if they don't?
Yeah, it's an interesting dilemma when you are the housing agency, and who will house those that we can't? And there are people that we cannot house and are not ready to live independently in this type of setting. And I started in homeless housing in 1988 at a shelter. And, you know, we had 19 rooms and we had a lot of services. We had daycare on site, 3 meals a day, case management. And some people really wanted our services and some people didn't.
And that was to my point. And I didn't mean that question negatively, because I realized that there are certain amounts of people who just want to hang out and get high and do whatever they're going to do.
Yeah.
So could there be a situation where, you know, they would be asked to leave and someone who genuinely wants
yes.
to help would be able to?
Yeah, I think in our situation still, we endeavor to do some forms of housing first model, but at the end of the day, community trumps individuals.
Absolutely.
We have to manage a community. We have the safety and concern for all of the residents, mm-hmm. And all of the staff, and all of our neighbors, mm-hmm. and we take that responsibility very seriously, and there are times when we will have to terminate someone's housing based on behavioral situations.
Yeah, and then one last thing, I'm not going to keep you too long, but one last thing is, as I don't know if the situation has improved, but in the terms of accessing mental health for these people, mental health services,
yeah.
As of January, the status of the system report said that there's a 36-day, on average, wait for an intake at our behavioral health system.
Yeah,
and then another 29 days till services.
Yeah,
you know, I think that maybe you guys can add something to this conversation in the future with them, because you're going to be serving people who are directly impacted by this situation.
Yeah, we're involved in a project up in Columbia County where there's going to be 3 components: supportive housing, permanent emergency shelter, and a 120-day respite for people with mental illness that has a very rich funding. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we've seen one of those, but I'm told that the funding is $125,000 per unit per person, which is huge. And Gateway might go up and do it via, you know, small 15 or so beds, but and it's meant to be a 120-day term respite for those suffering. And look, I think we, as a child, I could, growing up in Hyde Park, I was, you know, a few doors down from the Hudson River Psychiatric Center, and we had a lot of services, and there were a lot of professional, county professionally employed people, and I think we lost a great deal over time, and but I think we're bringing stuff back too. So I think at the end of the day, it really does take a community to serve the most vulnerable of our populations, and we'll be reaching out, and we're meeting soon with mental health staff here, and we have a great working relationship with DSS, police, fire, emergency. We need relationships with everybody to be ready to care for the people that we're going to be housed.
I agree, and I thank you very much for your answers, because you know, I've been all three. I've been homeless, I've been addicted.
Yeah.
I've suffered mental health issues, I've made no secret of that.
Yeah.
So I'm deeply invested in this project and in this community of people, and I appreciate you showing up very much, sir. Thank you.
Well, I'll say the last thing. My first mental health training person walked in the room and said, well, mental health, it's a line, and we're all on it. Mm-hmm. And we don't stay in the same place.
Jack Nicholson, one for the Cuckoo's Nest, right?
That's me and you, right? Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else for Kevin?
I have one other. Do you have a little more time?
Of course.
I think another part of this conversation that doesn't necessarily get highlighted enough, but I've been thinking more and more about, is construction costs and why we're seeing such high costs of new housing. It's not always necessarily that that the price of new housing is that high just because people want to make more profit. It's that the price of construction has gone up, and so that's where they have to set the price at to cover the cost and everything like that. So
yeah,
I know we've talked about this before, but I'm just curious if you have any thoughts, strategies, things you've seen anywhere else, whether it's a local government or a county government involvement in bringing down construction.
Well, you know, first off, we really appreciate the various partnerships we have with the county, including planning, Department of Social Services, and and this next thing could be another type of partnership. But yeah, I think innovation in finance is one thing, but innovation in construction methodologies, and we're all talking right now about panelized construction. So we've had modular, we've had panelized, we've got stick built. And I can go out right now and I can buy a modular, but I'm basically going to pay the market for that modular. We can go out and buy panels, but we're going to pay the market. So what about a workforce training program that will bring workforce dollars, not housing dollars, to the table, hire some young people, anybody who wants to learn how to build panels, and get maybe into the trades. We do not have enough people in the trades. For decades now, you know, no emphasis on BOCES. Everybody's going to college. You know, if you're a plumber today, you can make a mint. But the idea of doing panelized with workforce training dollars is hot right now for me personally, and I know we're talking to the county and others. I've got assembly people talking about it on both sides of the river. I don't care where it ends up, but I hope to be able to see us bring that forward, and then keep going. We definitely need some new ways to build things, I think, that are simpler, that get at all of the things we have to do. I mean, housing has to be everything, so energy efficient, very sustainable, resilient now to all of the types of climate change issues that we're seeing. And thank God we're not. Could you imagine being down south right now and the damage? Unbelievable. And in places that haven't seen that at all, even. So anyway, as an aside, but yes, construction methodologies and innovation, and perhaps the opportunity to train people, to encourage people to come in, we could definitely need more contractors, more people working in the trades. That would be helpful, and then more innovative ways to do it, and perhaps some other dollars. I think construction is a lifelong thing. I think you can take it wherever you go. I think you can, you know, and I think you can be paid well in the various trades. So
We put in a grant application to ESD for a siting study of modular, panelized modular factory, and I think we got a letter of support from UPCO. But that's our next step. I mean, hopefully we get it. But we've identified a couple of 4 locations in the county to potentially site it that have light industrial zoning and close act, you know, all the criteria that would be needed to site one there. So I'm excited for whatever comes of that.
Will you sell me those panels for the cost of what when you got your workforce training dollars?
Yes, that's the other thing we've been talking about is how do you make sure that the panelized construction that you are building with workforce development doesn't get used for high-end housing or market-rate housing, and how do you prioritize the pipeline for affordable housing projects so that costs for RUPCO on new housing projects aren't terribly high.
Okay, I want to move on. We have an item concerning regarding recent business closures in New Paltz. This is an email that got circulated to the county legislators. Wanted to get some thoughts from the planning department and also legal, and see if there's anything in that that can be handled or dealt with.
So, thank you, Kevin.
You're good with me.
I'm good. Thank you. Thank
okay.
you so much.
Thank yeah. you Thanks much. For the opportunity yeah. to speak with you guys. Good to see everyone. Okay.
Here.
Have a nice day.
You too. Yeah. So, I read through the letter a couple times. My focus is housing, but the planning department in general does focus on the business side of things as well. I think to what we were just talking about the cost of construction, I don't wanna like make any assumptions about that particular project in the village of New Paltz, but my guess is that partly the cost at which it took to construct that and the finance, the payback that they have to create forces them to set rental and lease rates for commercial space so high that no business could actually afford to rent there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a project coming in with the speculation that someone is gonna rent it, but by the end of the day, with financing where it's at, with construction costs or where they're at, for them to make their payback, they need to, or the bank is forcing them to set rents that high. And so those vacant storefronts sit empty for a long time. I know anecdotally that to be the case in a couple of places. It sounds like this specific project, there was some building code issues and inspection issues that essentially like forced them not to be able to rent it. So, you know, we don't have any ability to force their hands for that.
Right.
I think, you know, in terms of like policy and strategy, maybe you have some ideas. I mean, a vacancy tax, I know the city of Sacramento that I used to work for implemented a vacancy tax on commercial properties so that speculative real estate couldn't come in, or they could come in and buy a property, sit on it, use it to leverage against other properties, or just wait and have it sit there empty and wait for someone to rent it at a, you know, like a high-end retailer or something like that. And so that's been a big issue in the city of Sacramento. What they did is they put a commercial vacancy tax in place.
I don't know if I would suggest that for New Paltz so much as Kingston, because that's like the game that Neil Bender has been playing for like 20 years.
So yeah.
Just for the record, there's person in Ulster County that they should have that,
right.
But it's not in New Paltz.
Yeah, right, right. And how do you do it?
I appreciate that that's on the official record. I
yeah, how do you do that surgically in a way that you are not damaging folks who really can't find a tenant and are offering reasonable rates for rent, and then folks who are just sitting on property as speculation. But it does exist, it's out there. I don't know.
I'm happy to look into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Dive into it.
Yeah.
City of Sacramento.
Yeah. And I'm happy to put you in touch with someone there.
Sure. Or we could just fly there.
Yeah.
There you go.
Volunteers tribute. I will have to go. Use vacation, guys. Thank me.
Yeah. No, but outside of that, I didn't really do any research on strategies.
Just wanted to get kind of a first impression about it.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's just thoughts of what we can do. Because it does, you know, it's business occupancies, but that affects people being able to work, and not being able to work means you can't afford, you know, the rents, which kind of creates more of a cycle in that. So
right, and it doesn't look good to have empty storefronts in your community.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I mean, that was really pretty much it. There was a visiting up group on Monday the 7th, 10 o'clock?
I think it's 10
o'clock. 11 a.m. I think, to me, it's an interesting project. I think it's a project that sounds like it could be a good thing, and sounds like if we can replicate it in the future, it might be part of a solution to a lot of issues that we have around housing and around supportive housing and around mental health housing and those kinds of things. So I'm optimistic about it. It sounds like a great project. I want to learn more about it. That's why I asked for a tour. That's really all I have. Anybody else have anything that they'd like to bring up?
Yep. Yeah, Laura, I remember at the last meeting I asked you about Elizabeth Street once again. I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but this has been a long time now. Do you have anything to share?
I'm not allowed to. I'm so sorry. I absolutely cannot. I apologize. I know that there's things in the pike. I know I give you the same update every time. When the people are ready to announce things that are occurring, they will announce the things that are occurring.
I know you're not
the
boss. Just,
and as
you're
soon
just
as I can, Craig, I tell you what, when they do release that press release, I'm going to call you personally.
I really appreciate that.
I actually mean
that
quite sincerely.
I know you were prepared.
I have you listed on a post-it note on my computer.
And I know something else you call me about, too, because I did double-check. This was several months back, but since Mr. O'Connor brought up the respite bed house. I know that they were killed at the county legislature level.
They repealed the respite policy, yes.
However, Joanna mentioned to me something about there being a similar project possibly happening in Kingston with the longer limit, like a 120, like you suggested. Do you know anything about that?
I cannot speak to
another one we can't speak about.
I'm so sorry, yes.
No need to apologize. I'm just trying to find
out. I appreciate
out.
You being very nice to the messenger, though, Craig. I really do.
People are working on this really hard, but
yeah,
it does take time
really
to get
off. Yeah, we're working really hard, but it's one of those things where it better helps us to speak to them at the right time, whereas if we speak to them at the wrong time, and it can make things go awry, or if things don't come to fruition.
So we still have so basically you're still in negotiations.
I'm not even a part of negotiations.
You can't
also
even,
part
you
of that.
Can't
I literally,
even say that.
Yeah, I'm literally
you can't
not
even say
at,
you had this
I'm not at the table for that, if that helps
no,
you. Like, that's my best
you,
answer. I'm not
details.
One of the folks at the table for that one, so I will not speak
ask,
for the people at the table.
I did not ask details.
Is that a better answer?
That's a good one.
That's a better answer. I'm not at the table, so I can't speak for the people at the table.
Understood.
Yeah.
Understood. Well, I appreciate it. And you know I'm going to ask you about it next month.
I know you will, and I'm really, really, really
hopefully by then we'll have an answer.
I can have an answer for you next month, and
yeah.
I mean, let's all just cross our fingers and toes that it'll all be out before then. To your point on clinical processes at mm-hmm. residential areas,
yes.
I wanted to just clarify that
sure.
clinical services often come with very specific requirements, both in terms of the space that they're using, record keeping, and also the licensing of staff that do those services, and
mm-hmm.
so that is something that limited agencies have the capability to do. And in terms of providing on-site, providing clinical services at the Quality Inn would be a completely different shift in terms of the type of housing that it would be for all of the people there. So,
right, not necessarily clinical, but even psychiatry, as I mentioned, something about programs, like even some
yeah.
kind of a therapeutic program,
yeah.
anything like that.
So something
Brooke
does do, which I've always appreciated when I worked there, they used to do healthcare as a human right, and they would have them come to the housing units, and they would
right.
do these wonderful, you know, acupuncture and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
They would bring those services to folks. But
one more thing that wasn't mentioned, has any thought been given to any coordination with any kind of job training?
Yes.
Great.
I can answer that one real quick.
Awesome. Good. Because I think it would really benefit.
Yeah, no, the concept of case management and connecting to the wide plethora of resources both
great.
The county offers and also that our partners offer is something
great.
That we have been strenuously working on for
great.
Some time. And
okay.
there will be updates on that one in the very near future.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay. As always, Laura.
So I am going to adjourn the meeting. I don't even have to call a vote because it's just me.
Well done.
Thank you.
Awesome.